very grateful to have come out tonight on what is a very inhospitable evening to come out and discuss hopefully very interesting things. We've certainly got a very interesting panel to discuss them. And they're going to range over, as you may range over in whatever contributions you want to make, a range of issues to do with what we're calling morals and politics and political morality in Northern Ireland. And I shall quickly introduce the panel before they each have a few minutes to present some thoughts before we have a discussion amongst everyone. And let me start on my furthest right. That's not where we put himself there, with John O'Doherty. John is the director of the Rainbow Project, Northern Ireland's largest lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender support organisation. He was the author of a substantial piece of research looking at the perceptions and experiences of LGBT people towards hate crime and policing in Northern Ireland, and indeed in practice has served on the South Belfast and Macrofelt district policing partnerships, as well as a custody visitor and as chair of the Policing Board LGBT Reference Group. Welcome, John. Thanks very much. And next to John, Joanne Stewart. Joanne has spent most of her career in the IT industry, currently working with the Northern Ireland Science Park as Business Development Director. Formerly served for 3 years as chair of the Institute of Directors in Northern Ireland, one of the main business organisations, obviously. And for the last 3 years, she has been champion in Northern Ireland STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering and maths. Joanne has a diverse range of interests and passions, and other voluntary roles that she's involved in include being a trustee of the Integrated Education Fund, being chair of Arts and Business, vice chair of the Northern Ireland Assembly and Business Trust, treasurer of Tides Training and chair of the US Northern Ireland Mentorship Programme. Again, you're very welcome to Joanne. Thanks so much for coming. Malachy O'Doherty, no relation to either Joanne or John. To my knowledge. Malachy is, as many of you will know, a freelance journalist and writer who has covered Northern Ireland politics throughout the Troubles, Conor Gaiman, and the peace process over many years. He's a commentator and reporter, he tells me, and we expect to hear opinion from him. That surprises me, but I'm sure it might be true. To my left, we have Claire Bailey. Claire is very personfully sitting in tonight, for Stephen Agnew. Stephen, unfortunately, had to cry off today because he is involved in a debate at the Assembly on climate change. He does hope to be here when it finishes, but I realised that if I was going to have an argument with Stephen on the basis that it was far more important to discuss the censorship of the Bible by the moral guardians of Muslim than a world historic moment like climate change and impact on future generations of a livable planet. I can see that's going to be a no contest situation, so happily agree to have Claire in Stephen's stead. And as with everybody in the Green Party, which are not paying any allegiance, they're all fiercely bright and they can actually express an opinion in any case, so that's no loss at all to have Claire. Claire is a member of Stephen's team at the Assembly and of the party's All-Ireland Executive Committee, has worked in the third sector for many years, most recently in the Suffolk-Lenadoon interface area, and she worked there as community development worker and researcher on Healthy Eating Project. Those of you who know your Belfast acronym as well will know there is one, particularly odd one, called SLIG, which is Suffolk-Lenadoon interface group. If you want to impress your friend, you can put that online. She's lived in this area for a long time and is single mother too, and was one of the first cohort of pupils at Lagan College, which, of course, you know, was the first integrated school. Indeed. You could have been an infant prodigy. You probably met them when you were two, yeah? thanks, Claire, for stepping in. That's short notice. Dave Orchard. Dave is Professor of Philosophy at Queen's. He's the author of numerous books in political, legal and applied moral philosophy. He's a past chair of the Society for Applied Philosophy, and for 10 years was a member of the UK Human Fertilisation and Embryology Authority. Dave, many thanks for coming. And Edna Longley, again, needs very little introduction. She, of course, is an emeritus professor of English at Queen's, and asked to describe herself merely in five words as a literary and cultural critic. As any of you who know Edna will know, that covers, I wouldn't say a multitude of sins, because in fact she uses her withering pen to detect and expurgate the sins of others. I've certainly considered myself fortunate to go through life never to have been on the receiving end of one of Edna's acerbic reviews. I think that would be a trauma, would be quite difficult to recover from if one experienced it personally. And so Edna, many thanks for coming as well. Edna's just recently published a book on Yeats, which I'm sure she will happily tell you more about and sign copies of if you were interested in her doing so. Well, thanks for coming on, that's really much appreciated. And I'm going to go back to the beginning again and ask John to start from my right, just with a few thoughts on any or all of the issues on the agenda today, which I'm sure will range over homosexuality, abortion, and indeed the moral guardians of Mosley, and perhaps some other things as well. John, my thanks.
Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to speak here. If I ever speak at one of these events again, I'll have the sense to sit in the middle, not in the edge, so I don't have to go first. Hopefully I don't set the tone of length for everyone else, but if I do talk for too long, please tell me to stop. It's a real pleasure for me to be here tonight. I apologise about the soft glow of the laptop. I don't like to print too much, so hopefully I don't mind too much. I'd like to thank the organisers for inviting me here tonight. It's a real opportunity for the Rainbow Project to sort of put out there some of the positions that we have and key issues and some of the work that we're doing, but also the exploring the relationships between the morals of an individual and how this translates into public policy, I believe, helps us measure the true strength of our politicians and our leaders. Our personal morals dictate how we believe we should live our lives and the choices that we make and how we view others. However, in deciding what's best for our society, we require political morality from our politicians and leaders. A morality which is based on the needs of those represented, not based on our personal beliefs. The greatest political leaders and the best achievements in politics in our world have been based on the needs of those represented, have usually required compromise on the personal morals to ensure the betterment for all. And when we have the space to consider personal impact and personal need, we have the right to hold our morals and act upon them as we see fit, make choices that are right for us within the sphere of the law. For me, I think there's a real immorality in politics and the use of personal morality to remove choice for others. In recent years, many of you have become aware of the MSM blood ban, the ban on gay, bisexual men, or men who have sex with men from donating blood. This was highlighted after the committee with responsibility for the management of blood, tissues, and organs carried out a report which identified that a change from a lifetime deferral to a one-year deferral would have no impact on the safety of our blood. Now, quite interestingly, at the time, there were a lot of people who weren't even aware that there was a ban on men who sex with men from donating blood, and there was public outcry that this level of discrimination existed within our society. And then on the flip side, we had people calling out and saying, I would never accept a gay man's blood, I would rather die than accept a gay man's blood. And it kind of shows the two polar opposites that exist when issues like this are discussed. When it was first brought to the attention of the minister, he very quickly responded saying that it's not a change that he would be willing to implement without consideration of the evidence that existed at the time. Afterwards, he then said that he hadn't made a decision and he went on to make no decision and decisions over the next 2 years. And the clarity on whether or not he actually made a decision is something which is still under a bit of scrutiny. The introduction of the MSM blood ban was an important thing throughout the UK and throughout the world during the HIV and AIDS crisis. It was in response to a real public need in relation to public health, and it was appropriate that it was introduced. And the Rainbow Project as an organisation over the past 20 years had supported the MSM blood ban, but had asked in recent years, particularly since we've increased our understanding of HIV management, of how infection actually happens and how to actually test people, since we have developed those processes so much better, we called for a review. Now, I would love to say that the SABTO review was in response to work done by the Rainbow Project. I don't think that's the case, but we'll take responsibility for it anyway. This review led to a change to the one-year deferral in England, Scotland and Wales, but in Northern Ireland we're still in the position where we have a lifetime deferral. Now the question needs to be asked, why is that decision being made? And we've asked the Minister for the evidence as to why that decision was made in the way that it was. And unfortunately none of the evidence received actually indicates as to why the Minister has made this decision. Clearly, these types of decisions, particularly when we're looking at public health, need to be made on the best available medical evidence, which in the United Kingdom is through SABTO. Unfortunately, the Minister has went against that best available evidence. And we got a question... SABTO is the Committee with Responsibility for the Management of Blood, Tissues and Organs. They operate throughout the UK and they report on how best to manage blood, tissues and organs. So in Northern Ireland we still don't have that change, and we've got to ask that question about what is right here. Is it right that that decision was made in the way that it was against the best available scientific evidence, and why did the Minister actually make that? Was it on the basis of his own morality and his own position about same-sex relationships, which are very well known? The Minister has spoken on many occasions throughout the years in opposition to same-sex relationships, in opposition to indeed even the MSM blood ban, and also in opposition to equal marriage, civil partnerships, and any changes for LGBT people here in Northern Ireland over the years. And following a legal challenge, Judge Tracy ruled that the ban was irrational. The ban, however, still remains today, and the legal battle continues. In my view, the Minister's position is clearly a personal, moral one, and I think it runs the risk of causing harm here in Northern Ireland, particularly considering that we have a shortage of blood, that we continue to take blood from England, Scotland and Wales, since they have removed the lifetime deferral and introduced the one-year deferral. So what's good enough for people throughout the rest of the UK should be good enough for people here in Northern Ireland. And the real immoral aspect of this for me is the huge amount of money which has been spent in fighting this change through the courts. The Minister has spent tens of thousands of pounds opposing the best available scientific evidence to try and maintain a frivolous ban here in Northern Ireland, which has no impact on public health. And a similar story can be told around the rights of same-sex and unmarried couples jointly adopting. A ridiculous rule when you consider that here in Northern Ireland, before the change, unmarried single people could adopt. But if they were in a relationship, they couldn't jointly adopt. A single gay person can adopt, but if they wanted to jointly adopt with someone else, they couldn't. And if they were in a civil partnership, they couldn't adopt even as an individual. So me, if I was in a relationship, I could apply to adopt a child, have that child live with me, get a parenting order for my partner. So in fact, the law is one of the most pointless positions that we have. But we've had, again, tens of thousands of pounds spent in court trying to oppose this change, that the only difference it will make is make the adoption process easier and more accessible to those people who wish to carry that out. And you know, when we talk about adoption, a lot of people think that we're talking about the right to adopt. We're not. We're talking about the right to apply to adopt. And that's the difficulty that we have, that an unmarried or a same-sex couple can't apply to jointly adopt. They can't even be considered as possible adoptive parents. And when we look at the issue of equal marriage, is another one. One of the most politically divisive issues we have here in Northern Ireland today. Over 70% of the people in Northern Ireland, according to the Life and Times survey, say that they support the introduction of equal marriage. And that only drops below 50% when you get to ages 55 and above. It's not the position of the people of Northern Ireland, but yet the majority of our Assembly members oppose the introduction of equal marriage, again, on issues of morality. Again, when we look then at the issue of abortion, which has become one of those class issues here in Northern Ireland, because if you can afford to travel to England, if you have the infrastructure and the ability to actually do that, then that's something that is accessible to you as appropriate healthcare. You can't access abortion here in Northern Ireland. So those who don't have access to that information, those who don't have access to the finances to be able to actually facilitate that travel throughout the UK, they're banned from being able to actually access that appropriate healthcare. This is real healthcare that people are accessing. We know that people from Northern Ireland are accessing it. We know they're traveling throughout the UK. We know they're coming back to Northern Ireland and not getting the appropriate support advice whenever they actually make it back here to Northern Ireland. These are real issues that are impacting on the people, and the decisions being made by our ministers, by our government, are based on morals which don't reflect the public good and the public need. I think that's enough for me, and I'll leave the rest to Slash.
It's much appreciated. Joanne, what about you?
Thanks very much, Robin. Yes, it's a pleasure to be here. I did have a bit of a conversation with Robin about this, because I'm here really to give a business perspective, but it isn't possible for me to represent business on these type of issues. And so what I sort of want to talk about is the fact that we all have our own personal views, and I will have my own views on the subjects that are being discussed tonight. But as a business, we have to adhere to a very strict equality legislation to ensure that nobody is discriminated against. So within business, we are much more, we've got to be accepting of everybody's beliefs within the workplace. And it seems to me that, that should be required on a lot more organisations and individuals within Northern Ireland. From a business perspective, what are we looking for? We want a stable society, we want an open society, we want to have a place here where people want to live, work and are accepted. As John mentioned, with the survey, the Lifetime survey, is showing that young people have maybe a more liberal outlook. And what we want is them to feel that Northern Ireland is the place where they can be, the place where they want to stay and they want to work. And we need young people and that talent to stay in Northern Ireland and to work for businesses, to create their own businesses. So it's important for us that that we have that sort of society. And so some of the discussions that do go on are concerning into business, into the sort of society that we're developing. We also want to be in control of our own destiny with regards to particularly decision making, political decision making, and we don't want to see that being swayed by personal beliefs or morals, or also being maybe sort of driven off course by groups within our community in our society, rising up against certain issues, and then decisions will change based on that. So I think there has been a lot of popular decision making, and that's certainly we want to have a much more evidence based decision making process. But also from business, it is about having equality of opportunity and ensuring that there are no barriers to the job market. So we want to see, and a lot of businesses are working with government to ensure that everybody has an opportunity to develop through education and different pathways into work, and are working hard to make sure that those pathways are more accessible. And really, as I say, from a business perspective, we will have our own personal views, but from a business, those views don't come into play within a business. We have to be accepting of everybody. So that's where we're coming from.
Thanks, John. Very concise. Thank you.
Like a mafia, it's only business. Business is business.
thank you. Okay, yes, I'm Malachy. Yes, because John started by saying, and he'll correct me if I paraphrase him incorrectly, that because personal morality is dictating the political decisions that people are making, we need a political morality that is above personal beliefs. And Joanne then comes along to speak of personal morality basically as if it's a bit of a nuisance, that it's something that you put to the side and you go by the rules on. We have equality legislation and the rest of it, and we can live by that. So if we are, which is it to be? Is it that we have a sense of public morality which we can call everyone to account by and say, no, you should do things this way, you should remember your moral responsibilities? Much in the way that we would have done, I suppose, in the 1950s, or even in the when was Parkinson? When was the last time a minister had to resigned for the 80s for having an affair? See, you knew what I was saying before I leave the thing. Or are we saying that there is we'll just ditch the whole notion of morality in politics, and we will just draw up a set of rules and guidelines, and we'll hold people to these rules and guidelines regardless of what their personal beliefs are? I think we have problems with either approach. The fact is that morality for a lot of people, and particularly for the kind of people who seem to want to be MLAs, is not an optional extra in their lives. It is something which they want, at least they want some credit for having. There is the other possibility that they're all hypocrites, I allow you that. But they do want some credit for having. And the other thing about personal morality is it is personal. It's different for different groups and for different people and for different churches and for secular people and for religious people. And therefore, the idea that you can somehow or other condense a global or universal moral code out of all of that, that you can hold everybody to, seems to me to be very unlikely. There is a difference between a secular perspective and a religious perspective in this sense, in that the secular perspective, the secular person says, "Oh, my friends are Muslim, we get along fine because I allow him to believe what he likes, you know, and that's my generous liberal secular perspective in life." That I may even believe in God, but I don't believe in God to the point of knowing that God is there. I only believe in God to the point of having a culture or having an identity which may be different from yours but has the same kind of status as yours. And actual religious people, actual people who believe in God, don't think like that at all. They know. They live out of a conviction that God has... I mean, if you speak to some of the evangelicals around the DUP in their discussions about salvation or Sunday football or homosexuality or things of burning significance to them like that, you know, it's quite clear they're not talking in terms of opinion. You know, they're not mulling the thing over and thinking, well, I see where you're coming from, but, you know, they're just living by a book which they understand is perfectly legitimate and correct. Now, the fact that the book tells them that they shouldn't be sitting beside a menstruating woman doesn't seem to bother them too much. But if John is in a relationship with a person of the same sex as himself, that's highly problematic. But hold out, you know, the day may come when there'll be a proposal before the assembly that women ministers shouldn't be seated while they're menstruating. You know, one could not be entirely convinced that won't happen. So the other thing about the difference between secular and the religious is the secular also know what is right, you know, and they know what is right from science. When John speaks about homosexuality, he speaks with a kind of I'm not disputing him. I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm only saying that he speaks with the same, and I probably share his views. In fact. But when we do speak about those things, with a kind of conviction of being absolutely right about them. You know, we're not really going to debate with you whether homosexuals should be imprisoned for 14 years in Uganda. You know, we're not really going to discuss with you whether homosexuals should be castrated at birth or whatever, or whether it's natural or unnatural. You know, we're not good. You know, because we know already. And we've decided on that. And we've decided on that with the same level of conviction that a free Presbyterian has decided otherwise. So we are in a world in which, and we're in a community in which, perspectives are varied and different and strongly at odds with each other. And we want people within this community to get along, to be fair to each other, to be fair and decent to each other. We want them to be fair and decent to each other by our secular liberal code. You know, they want to be fair and decent to us in helping us to get to heaven and to be in hell, and that's very nice of them. But we just wish we wouldn't go to so much trouble. But that's the position we're in. So we're in a position, as I'm putting it, that morality is divided. There is no universal global code of morality that we can call people back to. We cannot insist that. That born again Christians who believe in that homosexuality is a sin, we can't insist on them changing their minds. Can we then insist on them not bringing that thinking to bear in their legislating? I'm not sure we can. You know, I'm not sure we can. I think we can only contend with them with political ideas of our own. You know, I don't think we can say you are wrong. To the point of denying them the opportunity. That way lies the route towards a totally secularized society, which we have not got, and will never have on this patch of land we call God's own country, you know. It's just not going to happen. So we have that diversity of spiritual and religious and secular and atheistic and humanistic ideas out there, and they are going to be in contention with each other, and they're going to be in contention with each other to an even greater degree as other cultures come in among us. And you know, some of that I look forward to and will enjoy as much as yourselves tonight, and some of it I don't look forward to. But there is the nature of the problem as I see it, that morality is not, as Joanne seems to say, something that you can merely set aside and call people back to the rule book on, nor is it something that you can encode over and above all political discourse and set in stone for everybody. It is a ferment of debate, and it will be for a very long time. Thank you.